good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, December 9th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody.
And what day is it today? Little girls and boys?
It's Wednesday, didn't you say?
It is.
That would make it happy hump day.
Okay. All right. We have Wendy Wilson joining us today, and I'm very excited about what she's going to bring us today, as I am each and every week. Just incredible amount of information that she holds and shares with you. So we'll be getting to Wendy right after the market report. And everybody's we have a little bit of a downer day here in gold. We have gold down $31 right now in the New York spot price after market. Off the low by about $15, so we'll take it. And I'll tell you why in just a little bit. So we're looking at $1,840 for gold. Silver was down 63 cents at $24. Platinum was down 25 at $1,005. Palladium was down $53 at $2,304. My belief, of course, you're going to see gold and silver having these corrections after the recent gains and blah, blah, blah. Well, we saw a little bit of a stronger dollar today. It's back up over 91. 91.05, up 0.08. I mean, it's not up a whole lot, but I think with the overall picture, maybe a little bit of everything had an impact on the gold and silver prices for today. Crude oil was up 3 pennies at $45.63. Paper markets today. Let's see, what are my paper markets today? We're looking right now at 4:04 p.m. Eastern. The Dow is down 150 points at 30,024. NASDAQ is down 243, almost 2%. 12,338. The S&P was down 30 at $3,672. 10-year yield 0.94%. European Asian markets were happy overnight, with the Japan being up 1.3%. And that brings us to a close on the market report for December 9th. And let's go right to Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Hello, Melody. Hello, Dave.
Hi there.
We talk about domestic pets are the isolation lifesavers. That's what it is. You know, if you are a pet lover, I'm a big pet lover.
Yes.
You tend to understand the value of having a furry friend around the house.
Except for Ruby. Nah, I love her.
Oh, yeah. Piranha on legs, is it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, countless, you know, studies have been showing us that pets, you know, lift the spirits of patients and hospitals and other valuable services to the disabled. Now, however, the COVID pandemic, though, has kind of offered a unique opportunity to highlight just how much of a lifesaver pets can be. And this new study is demonstrating that even a greater value that pets have in time of human distress. So we're going to check this out. This is a study, December 2020, University of South Australia, and they observed the life-saving role pets can have when pandemic fallout occurs. So social isolation takes its toll on humans and their health, and in some cases, you know, jobs are lost. And so we hear 5 million Americans who quietly slipped into poverty during the COVID pandemic, and many had to give up their pets in those situations. Very sad. So a majority of those folks, I'm sure, not going to be ringing in the new year, but isolation tends to take its toll. I don't know about you guys, but our governor just rolled out another soft adjustment. How do you like that term? Soft adjustment.
Sounds like a gentle massage to me.
Yeah, well, to our lockdowns here in North Carolina. So now we have a curfew. You can't be on the streets after 10. Mm. Restaurants can't serve anything after 10, and bars can't serve alcohol past 9. So, I mean, anyway, so the shelter in
place. Is that before or after the streetlights are on? Huh?
I don't know. Well, streetlights come on around 5:30. Here it gets dark. But the shelter in place or the society lockdowns are denying people what they really long for, and that's social contact and a sense of touch. And many children, actually, sorry to say, may grow up not being allowed to hug a teacher or a classmate and not even see their faces. So recently, I overheard this conversation when I was at the grocery store. There was this cashier who was telling a customer in front of me how she was trying to explain to her 10-year-old daughter at home that they have to social distance and wear their masks while they're at home. Apparently, the child thought that those restrictions were unnecessary when at home with family. And so it makes you wonder how far the governments are going to push this and how willingly people are going to accept it. Really, masks and social distancing at home. Seriously, that's, you know. All right, so the isolation tactics tend to curtail human touch, and there are more nerve endings in your skin, Melody, than there are in your human brain. And this is why the feeling of touch is so essential for a healthy life. So during the pandemic, the elderly who have pets have relied on the pets to comfort them and offer company. Here is a quote from Dr. Jeanette Young, University of Australia. She says, governments need to sit up and take notice that isolation has health consequences, and the sense of touch has been taken for granted, even overlooked, until the COVID pandemic. When there is limited or no human-to-human contact, it can be life-endangering, end of quote. She goes on to say, in the year 2020, when human contact has been so limited and people have been deprived of touch, the health impacts on our quality of life have been enormous, end of quote. So I don't think people are reporting much of this nature on isolation, how it's the sense of touch is really imperative. Now, according to this research from Australia, pets have offered humans a buffer against stress and the pandemic restrictions that have been created. So this is why there's been kind of an increase in pet adoptions, which have quadrupled, and breeders have even been putting people on lists for available pets. So more than half of the world's population share their lives with a pet. And in the United States, people spend a lot of money on their pets, normally about $260 billion a year. But with the pandemic, those figures, they are expected to be surpassed. Now, I'm trying to adopt a pet, Melanie. I don't know if I told you.
Yes.
I'm having such a problem. I mean, it used to be you can just go into PetSmart where they were having an adoption day, or go to the shelter, and you would pay whatever the medical fee for the treatment for the pet has been, which was like a couple $100, and you'd walk out with your pet. Not anymore. You can't even go to those places to adopt a pet. You have to do it through the website. You can't even call these places. The shelters aren't answering phones. And you have to go through this vetting process. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know. I want to say it's kind of like trying to buy a firearm. It's just, you have to fill out all these questionnaires, and it's just pretty insane what lengths and hoops you have to jump through just to maybe qualify to be a pet owner now. So all these applications are flooding in because people are wanting pets because they're lonely at home. So here is a question. This is a quote from Dr. Jeanette Young again. She says, pets seem to be especially important when people are socially isolated or excluded, and pets provide comfort, companionship, and a sense of self-worth. So I want to touch on this touch study. According to Dr. Young, she said, the sensation of touch has not been studied as much as it should. And according to her, the sense of touch is real important for our well-being, such as critical for growth, critical for any kind of development, especially young kids, critical for it reduces stress and your hormone levels, your stress cortisol hormone level. And also, touch is also important to the elderly, especially when they have a sense of decline. And this is really sad because now, you know, you can't even go see your family that's elderly at nursing homes or assisted living. They don't let you even go in there. Now, I don't know if you know this, Melanie, Dave, but the Germans did a study during World War II on newborn babies that were born in the concentration camps. And they reported that if an infant is touched in order to you know, look after it only for, let's say, basic needs for feeding it, bathing it, and changing its diapers, and then the infant is left alone any other time other than that. They documented the infant eventually wanes and then dies, even though its basic needs have been met. So Dr. Young's research is showing that people with pets stated that just touching their pets, you know, petting their pet's head, comforted and relaxed them, reduced their stress and anxiety, and pets enjoyed also the owner's company as well. And it's often been observed that pets can tell if their owner is upset, stressed out, traumatized even. I had pets over the years, and they knew exactly when I was like, mm-hmm. not.
That's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a pet knows when the owner's not feeling well, and they draw near to you to say, what's wrong, you know? And here is also a very revealing statement. This is from Dr. Young, again, University of Australia. She says, humans have an innate need to connect with others, but in the absence of human touch, pets are helping to bridge this gap. In the era of COVID-19, social distancing, sudden lockdowns, and societal upheaval, that's her term, she says our pets may be the only living beings that many people are able to touch and draw comfort from. And she says hospitals and hospice centers, the aged care facilities, they should be really encouraging pet connections with their residents. However, they don't always recognize the value of human-animal relationships. So I think that's true. I mean, I think there's a couple of hospitals that let you bring, especially children cancer hospitals, you can bring pets in to the children there. And doctors have seen them improve in their blood work and stuff like that when you bring pets in. So, interesting kind of statistic.
Are pets the healing or the benefits of owning a pet? This is something relative to a more modern time. I mean, I don't remember like going back to the, you know, 1800s or, you know, early 1900s and so forth that pets had an impact on people's behavior. So my question is,
well, they're more domesticated now. I mean, pets in the 1700s, 1800s, they were working animals. They usually were taken on hunts and stuff like that. Today, people, you know, aren't usually using them just for that, you know.
So we become a, you know, we've evolved into a
they're
softer.
Kind of like, yeah, they're kind of like the hairy baby of the family. You know what I mean?
My point is us as human beings now are more dependent on, you know, some sort of other.
Yeah.
Right. So my question is it healthy? Is it really healthy?
I guess to a point you could see it as being healthy, and another point it's, you know, kind of like a substitute, and, you know, from that standpoint, not healthy. So you can kind of like, you know, draw a line in the middle on that one. I think pets add something to a family unit. You know, I think they do. Unfortunately, I don't think they should be relied on in lieu of. If you have the opportunity to have other family members around you, you should. But there's also been some studies where some businesses would allow employees to bring their pets to work, and they found that there was more productivity when that occurred at work.
My pets have been coming to work with me for 25 years.
Yeah.
Every single day.
That's it, right?
They go to the office with us. All yeah. When we had three, they went to with us every single day.
Yeah. So, you know, it's real important to look after our health and, you know, the health of our pets as well. So given we kind of live in uncertain times right now with future events, we need to be more proactive. So now that at Apothecary Herbs, we have quite a few things that are natural products for pets, so we don't want to leave them out. So you can check out the pet section online at thepowerherbs.com. It's also in our catalog. So we have some wonderful we have Power Greens for Pets. I think I sent you some of that.
Yes.
You just add it to their pet food, and it just kind of covers what the pet food may be missing as far as nutrition. Also, we have those organic flea and tick collars that don't have any of those chemicals that are very harsh on the pet. So we got some things there for them. We even have, for those people out there that have very aggressive breeds, they like to tangle it up, especially with snakes, we do have a snake bite kit for pets, which, you know, a lot of people out in the Midwest, you usually pick one of those up because they see a lot of rattlesnakes out there. Mm-hmm. So we got copperheads here. I don't know what you got, but we have copperheads here.
I don't see any. We have black.
Melody
black
has
states.
Sharks.
No, we have sharks.
Yeah, right off the coast. I have to get some herbal shark spray, something
see,
like that.
I have Ruby. They don't come around.
Oh, yeah, those small dogs, they think they're big dogs, right?
Yeah.
They take on a big shark.
No more bullfrogs either.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just trying to adopt a dog, and I'm just shocked. A lot of times they'll say, well, this dog needs to go to a house with an existing dog in it. It's kind of weird, you know?
So surprised that you're having this much trouble, and particularly with just the surplus of rescue dogs waiting for homes.
I know, they're real specific. They'll say, this dog has to go to a house with a fenced-in yard, or with a mature dog already in the home, or has to go to a home with children in it. You know, so they're real specific these days about how they're placing these dogs. And jeez. I'm really shocked it's the foster people, the foster parents that have taken the dog into their homes and are fostering them until adoption, they're the ones calling the shots on who gets the dog.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah. It's not really the shelter.
Yeah.
It's those people. So they keep saying, be patient. We have a flood of applications, and it'll take 2 weeks. A lot of times you don't hear anything, you know? And sometimes they'll say, well, you got into this stage in the application process. Now you got to fill out another stack of stuff. It's, you know, I'm to the point where I think I'll just, you know, get on a breeder list for a dog and pay the extra money, because this is crazy. Really is.
Wow. Yeah, I had to go to Georgia for Ruby.
Oh, yeah? You had to drive. Okay.
Yes. Well, we actually flew. I was allowed to put her on the plane with me.
Oh. Well,
she didn't have to go into the cargo area. She was small enough, I was able to put her underneath the seat. So,
man, aren't you special?
So was she.
Well, my daughter's partial to the Corky. You know, I think the Queen has a bunch of those dogs.
They do.
And, they're very sweet, but they got no legs. They're kind of little. You know, they're just, I don't know what it is. They don't go upstairs. They jump upstairs. They bounce. You know, it's really interesting to watch them.
Because they have no legs.
Funky. They're little funky little dogs, but they're not cheap either. They're like $3,000.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I could do with $3,000. Buy some herbs. All right. Well, for those interested in a catalog, call us at Apothecary Herbs. Our toll-free number is 866-229-3663, or visit us online, thepowerherbs.com. Thanks again. We'll talk soon. Thank you,
Wendy.
Bye. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And let's see, where are we going to go today? You know, we just briefly, we had a stronger dollar. These markets aren't responding to any kind of news. They just glob on to something. I'm not quite sure there's anything, one thing in particular. Of course, it all comes down to the virus. We're going to be talking about that a little bit. You know, they have till the 11th to come up and sign an agreement. Keep government open. So, but Dave, a lot of the news just is pretty much really the same as it has been.
But that's 2 days from now, by the way.
Yes, it is. But you know what? I wanted to ask you. Yesterday we talked about JCPenney, or Monday we talked about JCPenney.
Yeah.
And we talked about two companies purchasing JCPenney.
Yeah.
And one of them was Simon.
Simon Property Group, yeah.
And they own lots of malls, mm-hmm. right? Well, there was a report released today. S&P's Quantamental Research Group highlighted seven names that face exceptional risks in the coming months. And one of them is Simon Property Group. And of course, their risk is they're mall owners, and they're having a very difficult time. And you know, they're facing these mall owners face the threat of additional shutdowns. So it's going to look even a bleaker picture for them heading into the new year. And so it's interesting. We've had a couple of mall owners go into bankruptcy. That was CBL and Associates and Pennsylvania REIT. We talked about them when they went in there on November 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
I do.
So again, I just thought I was reading this article about these mall owners having difficulties and Simon Property being one, and we just talked about them on Monday as far as the part owners are JCPenney, so they can't be hurting that bad.
Well, looks can be deceiving. You know, now perhaps you can't always believe everything you read, right? But
no.
You're not not having ever seen the financial statements of Simon Property Group, and what's the other one? Brookfield Asset Management, I think it is.
Well, they're on that list too.
Yeah,
the ones that are having problems.
Yeah, Simon, I think, has the Penny's merchandising operations piece, and I think Brookfield took over their property management. But you know, without knowing the say, the cash on hand in particular for both of those companies, it's hard to say. And I believe, I don't know, are both of those, do we know if both those companies are private? I don't know if they're private or public. They might be public. But, yeah, I mean, the less cash on hand, or put it another way, the more debt either or both those companies are in, certainly the higher risk their venture into an already cash-strapped, debt-ridden company like Penny's.
Yeah.
But I believe as part of the bankruptcy proceeding, I think the judge either agreed to eliminating paying back all of the debt or just pennies on the dollar, so they might be out of the, not out of the woods, but off the hook for that. But
or when they go into bankruptcy, what happens to J.C. Penney?
J.C. Penney goes along for the ride.
Yeah. So they get to acquire J.C. Penney for virtually nothing. Then, if I don't know,
No, I don't think so. I mean, they already own pennies. I just think the underlying value of pennies would fall further as, you know, either or both of those companies' finances go into tank. So I can see why they're on a risk watch article.
So,
yeah, surprise. No, I'm just gonna say once again, a big company. I mean, on the one hand, good for Penny's execs to do their best to, you know, keep the tradition alive, so to speak. On the other hand, you know, like many of the too big to fail banks that should have been let go of 12 years ago and weren't, you know, here's another case where you wonder if, you know, it just wasn't time to let sleeping dogs lie. No offense to our story on pets in the last segment.
Well, I have learned you do let sleeping dogs lie. But, you know, the number of public companies turning to the equity markets just to raise cash is at the highest level it's been in 10 years, Dave. And this is all according to Dealogic. You know, we've seen these companies just battered by the pandemic, or not, seizing on, you know, the higher stock prices just to kind of shore up some cash. Flashback, follow-ons, which are equity issuances after a company is already public, slowed to a near halt when the pandemic hit the U.S. in March. But amid the stock market rebound since then, and as companies' capital needs have skyrocketed, the number of issuances have exploded shortly thereafter. But in May and June, there were 192 of these deals. Now, this is all according to the RBC Capital Markets. Put another way, more than one-third of all of 2019's follow-ons were in the span of 2 months alone. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, so, what's driving this news, Melody? Well, Tesla said yesterday it would issue stock to raise cash for the third time this year. It's previously raised about $2 billion in February, and another $5 billion just 2 months ago. And Tesla now plans to raise as much as another $5 billion, issuing more stock. But rather than do it all at once, they're going to sell stock over time at its discretion. Remember, Tesla set to join the S&P 500 in just 2 weeks. So, according to one analyst, at Wedbush Securities, he follows Tesla. Dan Ives says Tesla raising enough capital to get the balance sheet and capital structure to further firm up its growing cash position and slowly get out of debt. Well, Tesla has taken advantage of the massive run-up in its share price, which is over 9 times higher than a year ago. And three major airlines, JetBlue, United, and American, all said they'd raise capital through stock issuances in December this month. Little to no travel demand means these companies are burning literally millions of dollars a day. Now, airline stocks did rebound 32% last month. As it became clear that vaccines would likely start being distributed then before the end of the year, possibly speeding up a return to normal, whatever that may be. Now, airline stocks still, after that 32% gain last month, are down 25% for the year.
Well, now here's a, what are these, all of these surveys, one after another. And I mean, where do they come? They do baffle me, but it's interesting to bring to the listeners. 80% of CFOs say the stock market is overvalued. Well, no kidding, Sherlock, I'm sorry. This is, a survey of Fortune 500 executives. It just came out this morning. And 80% of them, yeah. Who are these other 20%, as I want to know? But 80% of them say that the stock market is overvalued. So, to the extent that they believe it's valued properly or overvalued, that's going to have an impact on just how aggressive they are to funding acquisitions through equity, Dave.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm just looking for some historical.
Hysterical?
Yeah, it is hysterical. Some historical comparison to the PEs. Right now, it looks to be the S&P 500. 37.2. That may be a month or two old, but although it's down, it's not as high as they were in the middle of the Great Recession. Historically speaking, prior to the early 2000s, they were in the low to mid-20s to as low as, between 10 and 15. So these are clearly at historically high rates. And it's just another bubble. And not surprisingly, despite that, the majority of the CFOs, 60% of them, expect the stock market to be higher by the end of the year. I guess they're looking at a Santa Claus rally, Melody. In the economy, 18% rate the North American economy as good, while 26% say it's bad. Still, that latter figure is a big improvement from the 60% who called it bad just last quarter. And 59% expect better conditions next year. That's up 16 percentage points from the prior quarter. Interestingly, perceptions of China's economy exceeded those of North America for the first time in the quarter, and the gap widened this quarter. Nearly half cite good conditions now, with 60% expecting better conditions there next year. Now, surveys like this don't directly and certainly immediately move markets and hence the economy. However, they do show executive attitudes, which could point to future, and I say could point to future corporate tightening, such as slowdowns in capital spending and in hiring, and yes, an upswing in stock buybacks. So I guess that's my way of saying, although their values are limited, that's what we tend to look at when we bring them to you.
Well, cruise ships, mentioned, we went on a cruise last year, and I really believe there was something floating around on that ship. back in January, the beginning of 2019. But there was a Royal Caribbean cruise ship on a four-day pleasure trip. I think they're calling these, I think they have these cruises where you just they just cruise to cruise. There's no particular destination and so forth. But it's a four-day pleasure trip, and they were forced to return to port in Singapore. And passengers were confined in their cabins after a possibly false COVID diagnosis. And, of course, this is just showing the challenges of reviving travel here in the future. About 2,000 passengers on the Quantum of the Seas were stuck in their staterooms for more than a half a day after being informed that there was a single case. It was an elderly male passenger. He tested positive. He was isolated, and he was taken ashore to the hospital while officials traced his contacts on the boat. The Singapore Ministry of Health said later a retest of the original sample came back negative, as did a second sample. The ministry said it will run another test in a day. All close contacts with the passenger remain isolated as a precautionary measure. Dave, it's like how many false positives are really out there?
I suspect there's a good many of them. Now, it looks as though, is that Royal Caribbean calling
yes.
you, Melody?
Yes.
They want to know, hey, what are you doing this weekend?
Yes.
Do we have a deal for you?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, this incident does show how difficult it's going to be to get this particular industry, the cruise industry, up and running again. Particularly with vaccination of the masses still a while off. Singapore has virtually eliminated local transmission, according to official records anyway, and so-called cruises to nowhere like this, voyages that depart and arrive back in the same destination after sailing offshore, were a key part of the tourism reliant economy's bid to restart the sector. Companies like Royal Caribbean and Carnival have sought to shore up the safety of cruising so they can sail again regularly. Since the outbreaks on board earlier this year, the capital-intensive industry has essentially been on hold, with companies literally hemorrhaging cash just to maintain vessels, which are anchored offshore until they can take paying customers again. This episode's also a further setback for Singapore, which happens to be one of Asia's top financial hubs, also one that's reliant on travel and tourism.
I can't. Can you just imagine billions of dollars?
Oh, my word. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
It is. And it's crazy. We're heading into a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. As we're finishing up the cruise ships, we were talking about that heading into the, and this is what's happening in various industries around the world. I mean, look at the airlines. They have to be getting money from somewhere because they haven't been crying for a while. And remember, Dave, there was a lot of threats coming from the airline industry. And I mean, they have laid off thousands and thousands and thousands of people, but they've been fairly quiet lately. How they needed, you know, some stimulus or, you know, some bailout money from the government.
I think they've probably been in churches and monasteries praying and meditating. On vaccine and business turnaround.
And I mean, it's just, I can't imagine the, just, and how anybody thinks that things will be back to normal once a vaccine starts getting into people. It just baffles me. It truly baffles me. But anyway,
For me, I've decided, my only expectation in terms of anything close to normalcy is really just going to be limited to a period of time where we can live, even if not completely, largely mask-free. I don't know when that's going to be. That's sort of my own sort of baseline that I've etched out. But in any other sense, it's just going to be, I think, a new experience for all of us. It's like we're coming through the looking glass, and you know, we're on the other side right now. When we're able to come back through. You know, I don't know if it's gonna look a lot like we were used to it.
No, things have changed.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the sad thing is a lot of folks don't realize how it's changed.
Yeah, and, you're right.
Thinking that things will be going back to normal. And...
gosh.
They have created a new normal, and I don't think anybody is going to enjoy the new normal.
Yeah, think about the disruption, just from an emotional perspective, where that could lead when, you know, millions of people realize it's like, Oh, geez.
I mean, I think people believe that all of a sudden there's going to be jobs, all of a sudden there's, you know, things. And it's the same thing with, you know, this administration coming in. Those who all did the voting, they think it's going to make a difference. Well, they're the ones that are going to be shocked the most, because it isn't going to make a difference. Everybody always has their own little hope. And we put hope into these people thinking that it's going to make a difference, but it's not. It won't. It can't. So, you know, unless you think the new norm is what comes out of that hope. So, yeah, it's you know, it's, I don't know, a new age? I don't know. But there's going to be a lot of rude awakenings here in these next couple of years. And so, you know, and I think you're going to talk a little bit about lame ducks. I think we're going to have a lame duck for a long time. It's just not the end of a presidency. I think it's going to be, you know, of course, it really does depend on what happens in Georgia. That will set the wheels in motion. But the underlying things, ladies and gentlemen, it's still going to be the same. It's not going to be better. But going into the break, we were talking about the vaccines. Well, not the vaccines, but the cruise ships. And today, the UK's national regulator said that people who have a history of significant allergic reactions shouldn't take the vaccine. The Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency updated its guidance to British Health Service trusts on who should receive it. Now, this is a warning that comes after two members of Britain's National Health Service experienced allergic reactions. Then NHS says any person with a history of a significant allergic reaction to a vaccine, medicine, or food. Well, that's everybody. Heck, that's everybody in this country anymore. Everybody's allergic to something.
Thank God they didn't say to the environment.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's allergic to something. I mean, I'd like to see the sales receipts for Benadryl. So here's just one of a reaction to personally what I believe. I mean, the time frame of getting this out, it just doesn't equal the billions of doses that they're supposed to be dispersing to various countries for the time frame. I mean, it's just insane, Dave.
Wow. 7+ billion is too much for you?
Well, you know, it was just a month ago.
Come on, skeptic, you.
We talked about that, I think this yesterday, I think I said. I mean, it was only the second week in November when the trials were just finished. So in a month, you get all the approvals by all these countries and sending them out for injections in less than 30 days?
Well, that's just the first round, though. I mean, it really is just the UK, and as of tomorrow, I believe the US.
That's still a month.
Still tons of other... Oh, yeah, undoubtedly,
It hasn't even been approved yet by the FDA.
Right. Yeah, that'll happen tomorrow.
Well,
unless this.
Good luck to those who willingly inject that in their arm prior to, you know, seeing what any effects that it really has.
But, well, that's the big difference between this vaccine and virtually every other that's been approved around the world. But the UK was the first. Yesterday, it began this vaccination drive in hospitals. with healthcare and health and home care workers and those over 80 years old first in line. Dr. June Rain, who heads the agency over there that Melody mentioned, told a UK committee on actually today that the regulator would maintain, quote, real-time vigilance of the vaccine now that it's being deployed. She went on to say, we know that from extensive clinical trials that this, presumably the allergy issue, was not a feature, but if we need to strengthen our advice now that we've had this experience in vulnerable populations, we get that advice to the field immediately. Well, no frickin' duh. All of a sudden, Melody, yet another plot thickens in this very thickening and sickening times in our lives.
Oh, well. It's time for our weekly segment. I think we have time to finish this segment up with Your Levity is Golden, Dave. I don't know. Is this levity is about quacking? Am I really saying that?
Well, you know, we do talk about quackery a lot on this program. This is just kind of an extension of that. You know, there's a lot of talk in Washington these days about a lame duck Congress and a lame duck president and vice president, but why is an outgoing president and members of Congress called lame ducks anyway? Well, it turns out the term dates back over 250 years. Going back across the Atlantic, the earliest reported reference to lame duck came in a December 1761 letter written by British historian and politician Horace Walpole to Sir Horace Mann. He said, or he wrote, "Do you know what a bull and a bear and a lame duck are?" Alluding to a phrase used in the so-called Change Alley. Those were coffee houses that evolved into what became the London Stock Exchange. Lame duck described the person who defaulted on his debt. The idea was that this trader would be powerless and vulnerable to predators, like a duck unable to keep up with its flock. Unable to pay up, the defaulter had to waddle off. The term remained in use into the 19th century and eventually reached the U.S. financial markets and other areas of culture here. In 1869, the writer George Bungay used the phrase in reference to supporters of the temperance movement who faltered in their commitment over time. Uh-oh. Fallen off the bandwagon. In Wall Street, we have a class of men known as lame ducks. This is Bungay, the writer. They have met with financial disasters and cannot keep pace with their more successful competitors. Now, the political application of the term appeared around the same time. In 1844, a writer for the Gettysburg newspaper, The Compiler, opined about presidential candidates. He wrote, "Henry Clay is acknowledged to be first rate at the game of brag, but James Polk will make a lame duck out of him." In the early 20th century, lame duck began to refer more specifically to politicians who had lost their recent elections but hadn't yet left office. The New York Evening Post in 1910 alluded to Lame Duck Alley, a screened-off corridor in the White House offices where statements who went down in the recent elections may meet. They called it electoral combat. In 1922, the New York Times mentioned a plan to have the convening of Congress moved up to avoid lame duck Congresses. Well, lame duck informally made its way into constitutional discussions with the adoption of the 20th Amendment in 1933. Fact, nicknamed the Lame Duck Amendment. It moved back the dates for the inauguration of the president and the start of the new Congress. Pundits now regularly use lame duck, not lose, that's a Freudian slip, to refer to outgoing presidents and members of Congress in a period before newly elected officials take office. It's also used to describe congressional sessions during that time. Atlantic magazine writer Megan Garber, however, has described lame duck as a terrible term. She wrote, in fact, that lame duck is often inaccurate. Quote, the golden years of a presidency can be, for better or worse, intensely productive ones, not just despite a president's ability to extricate himself from standard political pageantries, but because of it. Well, Melody, for now, like it or not, lame duck remains the descriptor most of us use for that period after an election before a newly elected person comes on board. For members of Congress, that'll be first week in January, most of them anyway. For the president, January 20th. And that, Melody, is this week's Levity is Golden. Wah, wah.
You know, that is kind of interesting about how it comes about. And but I mean, it can you can have a lame duck session prior to, you know, the period after an election, before the newly elected person comes on board.
Absolutely.
I mean,
there's going to be one to keep the government running. That'll be tomorrow or Friday.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. Well, we're just about out of time.
Hey, how about it, your buddy, Angela Merkel, Melody, number one, the most powerful woman in the world, according to Forbes.
Oh, geez. Yeah, she is. She's the number one elite. She, you know, she was the leader of the, so why wouldn't they name her as the most powerful woman in the world? But anyway, we'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Be safe. And until then, God bless and good night.
Bye-bye.
I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.